Dr. Tara Cousineau has written a new book. It's called The Kindness Cure, How the Science of Compassion Can Heal Your Heart and Your World. Tara, are you with us?
I am.
I was totally wrong, John. She's there. Ooh, we're good.
So, that would have been rude.
It's all good.
So tell us about your name. I was off air. I was telling you I used to have a basketball team where I had three Taras and Taras, and you have no H. So what's going on with that?
I'm ageless, actually. No, I'm actually a mom of teenage girls, so that places me in the continuum of the lifespan. But yes, I pronounce my name Tara, and I was given my name by my mother, who was German, and her favorite novel was Gone with the Wind, the American novel. And The Plantation, if you recall, is Tara, which means earth, Irish. And but my mother, has a very thick German accent, and so her interpretation was Tara, Tara. So I go by Tara.
All right.
Well, this new book that you've put out, I just feel like it kind of comes out in the world at the right time. And you think that kindness is just part of us. It's part of our genetic blueprint, but we don't exercise it quite enough.
Right.
So first of all, what do you mean by the word kindness?
Well, my definition is very simple. I define kindness as love in action. And it's not really complicated, but we do probably put it front and center as much as we ought to in our lives.
So why do you think we need kindness right now in this moment we are in? How could it help things?
Well, kindness is one of those things that it's always timely and it's always timeless, because I think that we always sort of are confronted with this paradox of kindness and cruelty. Both are part of human nature, and we are all, every one of us, capable of being anywhere on that continuum. And there are just certain times and phases in life, I think, when it just really kind of hits us, and all of a sudden we see kindness everywhere, or the need for kindness everywhere, and I think we're in one of those landscapes. It's actually one of the reasons why I wrote the book, because I was asking myself the question, like, what happened to kindness? Like, why can't people be kind in, in just everyday discourse? So it was one of the impetuses.
Were you finding out that you weren't being kind?
Well, I think that I think I was waking up very frustrated and, angry. And, there was a time period about 3 years ago where my kids were saying, Mom, what is going on? Everyone's so mean. Like, are there any places that are safe in the world? So I've got teenage girls and they were frustrated that I live in the Northeast in the Boston area. And then 1 year we had the Boston bombing. We had Sandy Hook Elementary school shooting, and we had the Aurora, Colorado shooting in 1 year, in 12 months. And it was, and my kids are doing now, drills at school, about hiding under desks and in closets. And this is like really a new phase. I didn't grow up with this. And I think a lot of people were asking, like, what the heck is going on here? And so I just said, listen, I'm a clinical psychologist, researcher. What does science have to say about kindness today? Is there something that we don't know about kindness that really needs to kind of be front and center and put into people's consciousness? So that's what I did.
What should we know about kindness?
Well, I think one of the things that I learned is that the social sciences and the neurosciences are basically proving out what sort of the wise elders and ancient wisdom has always been telling us, that kindness is love in action, that it is a part of us. And, through sort of human evolution, we have actually always sort of cultivated this kindness instinct. We would not have propagated as a species without the ability for caring, cooperation, and generosity. In fact, it's an incredibly strong human instinct. But it gets sort of, pushed to the side, kicked to the side, if you will, with sort of our adoption, if you will, of survival of the fittest, which is also part of our genetic blueprint. But we actually need to focus on putting in the effort on really reminding ourselves and practicing empathy and compassion and generosity, because it really is natural to us.
And you know what else? It's extremely rewarding to be kind.
Yes.
Both ways. And I talked about this example I did this morning. Last week, I opened a door for a woman, and it wasn't just like she was 2 feet from me. She was like 50 feet from me, and I waited and I opened the door, and I'll guarantee you it made her day. And you know what? It made my day too.
And you said it kind of seemed like she had that had never happened to her before.
Her reaction was like, nobody's ever done that to her in her entire life. And, you know, it made me feel good. It made her feel good. I guarantee you.
Yeah. And, you know, the science actually shows this, John, that, you know, that there is this sort of uplift of positive emotions when we are generous and kind. And also when we do it with a real sort of no expectation that we're going to get an outcome. I mean, we're doing it from the generosity of our hearts. It's something that we want to do. And we actually do feel better about it. And usually other people feel better too. And there is this sort of, you know, kindness is contagious. If you recall, like, the bumper sticker from the 1970s, you know, sometimes I think, you know, we get annoyed by those sort of affirmations. But science is actually showing that when we insert into our social networks, whether that's offline or online, an idea or a behavior or an attitude, that it spreads. And again, I go back to that paradox. So we can insert negativity or we can insert positivity. So this is why, you know, I wrote the book, is that it actually takes effort. We have to really be intentional about how we go about our days, because what we do matters.
So do you think we should actually have that as, like, on our to-do list, to do something kind every day?
I think it's one of the first things that we should have top of mind in the morning. I mean, usually when people wake up, they look in the mirror and they say, oh, I really don't look that good today. I mean, they probably worse than that. Or, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to go through, you know, a really hard day, or work's terrible. You know, we just wake up and we automatically go to this place of negativity. But if we can intentionally say, how can I bring kindness to this moment? How can I do something nice for somebody today? And, you know, it actually shifts our whole attitude.
It seems like it would be important that we need to be kind to ourselves, too, and not beat ourselves up about our body image or all that stuff.
We do this constantly, and we do it sort of unconsciously. And I like to remind people that, you know, I teach meditation, and I help people to calm down and sort of manage their emotions. If we all could learn how to allow our emotions but manage them, we'd all be in a better place. But self-compassion is so much a part of that, is that we are human and we have these immediate reactions to life. But how do we respond to it? And I think that we don't slow down. So your example of just even holding the door and standing there for 30 seconds is actually just really important. And we all need to kind of slow down, even when we wake up in the morning and all of a sudden our minds start to race. It's just to kind of take those deep breaths and say, okay, intentionally, how do I want this day to start out? And it might just be saying hello, I love you, getting somebody a cup of coffee, you know, opening the door, those kinds of things.
You know, some people aren't raised in the greatest of families. They're not raised in a great environment. Can you learn to be kind? Because maybe there have been an environment their first 5 years or 7 years of their life where there has been no kindness. And is it hard to get it back?
Well, I think that we all have the capacity for empathy, but early nurturing is really so important. I mean, you know, when I talk about self-compassion, in a way, it's like we have to actually reparent ourselves. A lot of us grew up in pretty chaotic upbringings, or sort of lacked nurturing, or maybe there was only one person that might have been actually somewhat kind to us. I mean, we can repair, but if there's really a lot of early neglect, that is harder, but it is possible. And I do think that in the scheme of things, most of us have had somewhat challenging circumstances growing up, or even in our adult lives with relationships or work or whatever. And we can actually change how we are in the moment and in the future. We can orient ourselves in different ways. But a lot of that comes from learning how to foster then positive connections, you know, in our lives. Like, we can make that change. We are not necessarily stuck with what we were raised with, put it that way.
We're talking with Dr. Tara Cousineau. Her new book is out. It's called The Kindness Cure, How the Science of Compassion Can Heal Your Heart and Your World. I was telling John the other morning, I woke up and I was, you know, that kind of your foggy brained, and I was like, what is that? My hand was kind of out. Mm-hmm. I was like, what is that feeling? And my cat was laying by me and her paw was in my hand. And I was like, Aww. Oh, that is a nice way to wake up. Thanks. Thanks, yeah. Aiko. And, you know, I noticed on your website you have a video for this new book, and there's a dog in it. So I'm kind of wondering about
Leo.
Animals and how that brings out a kindness in us that we maybe don't have for humans sometimes.
Well, that's true. You know, and even, like, in the most traumatic experiences in the United States, they send the K-12 dogs out, you know. And actually, my daughter's in college, and during final exams, they actually bring the therapy dogs, and the kids get to take turns to kind of calm themselves down before they go into their chemistry exam. I'm like, either that's really overly coddling of college students, or it's actually really kind of a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, pets are so instructive for us. They know our vibe. They can calm ourselves down. And often when I'm teaching meditation, I have people imagine a cat on a warm windowsill and their belly is going up and down. You know how they purr? Like, we can really actually model that for ourselves. It's how we can recruit our own physiology to calm ourselves down. But pets are enormously beneficial for us in that way. They help us, you know, love them and love ourselves.
Yeah, they calm you down. So what role does education system play in it? So preschool now in the United States, we're trying to learn our facts, our math facts, even when we're 4 years old. But I know for a fact in countries like Denmark and Sweden and things like that, a child's first 5 years of their life, they're not worrying about any of that stuff. They're just worrying about being good citizens and being kind and stuff. So I think we have a lot to learn from them.
I absolutely agree. There was actually an article in the New York Times recently about teaching little girls to yell and boys to be, you know, kind.
Yeah.
You know, or to dance. Actually, it was teaching boys how to dance right. And girls how to yell. And I just loved that. I was like, oh, my God, if we could all do that. You know, I think for the most part, our public school education is pretty good with preschoolers and kindergartners and first graders doing kindness campaigns and things like that. I think that's natural and it's reinforcing. I think the harder part are these sort of no-touch policies, you know, where teachers now are afraid to even touch their kids when, you know, we really, you know, that is a part of human nurturing and interaction. I do think that there's sort of this, and I don't have statistics on this, but is that, you know, I just know as a parent and as a psychologist is that the kindness campaigns and the empathy training really starts to fall off towards the end of elementary school. And we really need to continue in our families, in our, you know, spiritual settings and our school settings to continue practicing empathy. And it has to be developmentally appropriate. So what you might teach a five-year-old about kindness is going to be much different than what you teach a middle schooler or a high schooler or even an adult in the workplace. So I think, you know, we all need remedial training and empathy. We need to remember how to put ourselves in another person's shoes without necessarily being hijacked by their pain or suffering, right? Because that's what gets us, mm-hmm. is that we end up feeling aversion or we numb out or, you know, we just get so overwhelmed, which is what I talked about in the beginning of my book, is that we just get into this overwhelm and we shut down. And really, part of it is taking the courage, right? Both the time, the pauses that we were talking about, but also, you know, it takes courage to kind of connect with other people who might be in distress or who are different than you. It takes a little bit of effort, but it's really worth it.
You know, like you said, in this certain time where there's no touching and things like that, I recently went through a volunteer training to work with youth, and I coach women's basketball at the college level, and we went through a training, and the screen came up, and it said, no touching. And it's like, and they went through it and they kind of explained it. And I went back to it. I said, now, wait a minute. Now, I'm a nervous wreck. What happens if you have a 9-year-old girl who's excited to see you because she likes you, because you're maybe a good role model for her, and she comes up and she gives you a hug every morning, you know? And it's like, are you supposed to say, no, that's not appropriate? You know, and then what message does that send? I just think things like that are just getting a little out of whack. And I understand why, but it kind of scares me.
I totally agree with you. I think that we've sort of we've polarized situations that we're not even just sort of being natural human beings and giving a handshake and a high five. And in fact, there's a fascinating study. I cite it in my book. It's the chapter on touch about basketball teams. And scientists did this study about basketball teams in some year, and they looked at all the NBA teams. And they actually counted on video how often the basketball players, you know, slap each other on the butt or the back or did high fives or, you know, hugged each other. And sure enough, the teams that had more touching were the ones that ended up advancing in the field. And that makes sense. You have to have this sort of connection, and a lot of it is really sort of these intangibles, right? And I think that when you take things out and get overly paranoid about, you know, basic human interaction, we're really doing ourselves a disservice, and we are sending the wrong message.
So, Tara, I want some, like, real-world advice. So this weekend is Easter. Say you're at the Easter table, Uncle Dave is there, you might have, you know, the very different political ideas than you do. How do you approach that family dinner with kindness?
Well, you know, this comes up around Thanksgiving too, right? Any time a family is together at the dinner table, all the dynamics surface up. And, you know, I think one of my strategies, I actually have two. One is, I tell myself not to take anything personally, because what another person believes and thinks is really about them. It's not about me. And not to, it's just kind of really have this understanding that that's their belief. They're doing the best that they can, and not to take it personally. That's step one. The other sort of mantra I have for myself is, how do I bring kindness to this moment? You know, and sometimes we have to say, you know, listen, we're going to have a nice family meal, and we're going to, you know, keep politics, finances, and parenting out of the room. That was actually my rule with my mother. I said, Mom, you cannot talk to me about finances, parenting, or actually religion. And she's like, well, what does that mean that I can talk to you about? I go, the weather.
The yeah. food, you know.
But also, you can have Aunt Gretchen come over, and she comes in, and she makes it a point to give everybody this huge, gigantic hug. And it's like, okay, there's got to be a happy medium there. I mean, to me, sometimes that's not kindness. That's like overkill. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I think that that comes in the area where I say, you know, kindness is not necessarily being nice or agreeable. I mean, there are moments where you have to set boundaries. And how do you do that in a way where you're not going to offend somebody? So sometimes, you know, there are side conversations that need to happen. I mean, we can't, you know, that aunt who's giving the big, you know, mushy hugs is, that's all she knows,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And sometimes we just have to say, oh, here comes Aunt So-and-so with the hugs, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
And, you know, and so there's sort of like, you know, some diplomacy in all of this. You know, I think that we can be kinder to each other in terms of, you know, sharing and complimenting each other on the food. And, you know, I often like to talk about with my kids, because when you have teenagers, you ask them how their day is, they're like, fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no conversation. But it's like, well, what's the high point of your day? You know, tell me one thing that really made you laugh today. You know, sometimes you get nothing. I'm like, oh, really? Because I know that I have girls and they're laughing all the time with each other. And, you know, you just kind of try to draw out, you know, sort of the positivity that might have occurred. Or you can do like, you know, what was your low point and what was your high point? You know, because life is a balance.
Sure.
So I think that there are some strategies around the dinner table.
That's Tara Cousineau, her new book, The Kindness Cure, How the Science of Compassion Can Heal Your Heart and the World. For more information, you can go to taracousineau.com. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too. You're listening to the Friday Morning Show.